Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
Hello and welcome to the Managing Uncertainty podcast. This is Brian Strauser, principal and CEO at BrightPath.
This is Barry Wheeler, consultant at BrightPath.
And this is our Brightcast edition for the week of September 30th, 2019, where we take apart two or three events, stories, announcements, and talk about what it means for companies and nonprofit organizations in the private sector. Bray, what do we got today?
So we have today just a couple items today. Everybody's favorite topic that we've been talking about probably for quite some time, Hong Kong. What is new? We've kind of avoided talking about this just a little bit to kind of avoid fatigue and the fact that kind of the situation kind of remains as is until kind of over the last few days, particularly Monday here this week, where Hong Kong police, for the first time in all these months of protests, actually fired a live round or more at protesters, but actually hit a protester with the live round. So this is the first time that kind of violent force has been used by Hong Kong police against the protesters. The protesters kind of reignited some pretty heavy protests and different actions kind of over the last few days, including setting fire, shutting down the subway, blocking traffic, kind of all of their MOs, but very much picked up the intensity of what they had been doing, you know, over the last couple of weeks anyway. And so the reports are that this police officer felt threatened. He was being attacked, according to him, and so ended up firing off shots. In addition to that, Hong Kong police have also fired live rounds into the air over the past 24 to 48 hours. So more live ammunition being used, not necessarily directed at people, but definitely being discharged. So that's all to say in the context. This is all kind of happening in the context of China's National Day or the 70th anniversary of Communist Party rule. There's a big kind of celebration and parade here on Tuesday this week in which, you know, kind of all the pomp and circumstance that kind of China does with these different kind of national days. This being the 70th anniversary, it was a little bit bigger. Unveiled some new weapons, but kind of the unique piece to Hong Kong was a couple of things. One, Carrie Lam was an honored guest, which isn't out of the norm. However, was highlighted as kind of a guest. And then the president of China, Xi Jinping, actually made comments in his speech almost from the get-go. Around no force can shake the status of our great motherland. No force can obstruct the advance of the Chinese people and Chinese nation. He also went on to say that they would maintain the lasting prosperity and stability of Hong Kong and Macau. So
specifically called them out.
So it was definitely left no mistake, as the New York Times reporter points out, left no mistake that Hong Kong is on the minds of Chinese leaders right now.
So there's a couple things to unpack here around all of this. I think the first is this appears to be an escalation on the part of the government in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. They arrested over 100 protesters, I believe it was, during this weekend's protest. They shot at the one individual and wounded him, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, what was the size of the protest this weekend? I don't know that I caught that in the news, but how did this compare to some of the protests we'd seen previously?
I think in terms of the, so there was kind of two simultaneous protests going on. I'm trying to see if I can find the numbers right in front of me. The kind of more violent actions, I think, are just kind of within the norm of what they have been over the last couple of weeks, but their intensity of what they were doing increased, which was kind of notable. But there was also a peaceful kind of protest march in Hong Kong as well, kind of an anti-Chinese mm-hmm. Day parade, mm-hmm. Which was much better attended in terms of protest size. But I think it's all within kind of the average norm of what we've seen. I don't think it's surged to the millions like it was at the height of it. But it was definitely enough to get attention of security forces, as well as kind of notable in terms of the kind of the counter parade to China.
The second part of this is just the other part here to unpack, I think, is the 70th anniversary celebration that kicked off today, October 1st, as we're recording this. These are some pretty strong statements from the president, not just about Chinese dominance and expected Chinese growth as a great power in the years to come, but these specific commentary around Macau and Hong Kong in particular, I think just goes back to the New York Times' take on this, that we're going to see change in Hong Kong now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not at a more glacial pace as we were expecting for a long time, but at a more aggressively and deliberate manner to bring Hong Kong more in line with Chinese norms. Is mm-hmm. that your perception from this as well?
Yeah, and I think it was also pointed out kind of in some of the opinion and commentary pieces, which I also agree with, maybe not as kind of on the same timeline as it was suggested, but kind of Hong Kong's diminishing importance due to the kind of the trade war, battle, skirmish, whatever you want to call it, between the U.S. and China. The fact that Hong Kong's importance is diminishing as a part of that right now, coupled with these democratic protests, it was suggested that we could see a definitive change in Hong Kong eventually, and sooner rather than later, just based on the fact that China feels like they can get away with a little bit more now that it's not as important. They will face less international pressure. There's less domestic pressure. There's more violence going on, kind of asserting their need to kind of get the situation under control. It also flies, as was suggested in some of the reporting, kind of around kind of China National Day, that, you know, the president of China has kind of been working to kind of homogenize China rather than kind of expanding on the diversity that China has kind of touted a little bit for several decades as a part of what they're trying to accomplish, that they're actually going in the opposite direction, which is probably going to cause him more problems in the future. But there's that part of it too, where they're trying to assert the kind of one China homogenous idea that's going on. So there's just a lot of context. There's a lot of factors kind of at play with Hong Kong right now that probably doesn't bode well for what we were used to as Hong Kong a year ago, 2 years ago, 6 months ago, to what we're going to see in 6 months, a year from now, 2 years from now. I think it's potentially at a tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly has continued to escalate. So for companies, you know, we've kind of been talking about this in different ways of, do you have a BC plan? Do you have kind of an evac plan? Are you thinking about how your operations work in Hong Kong? Those kind of things. I think if you haven't already, not to sound too alarmist here, but if you haven't already, now really is the time. Because as we've seen since the beginning of this, 115 days, I think it is, of protest activity, there's been no de-escalation of what has kind of gone on. There's been no real positive signs of kind of getting back to what was considered normal. It's only increasing now. And the fact that there's some violent kind of tactics being used, both by protesters and by security forces, it's probably going to continue. There's no way, kind of, right. you can't put the lid back on that.
Can't put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Yes.
As we were talking this morning in my office prior to recording the podcast, this is also probably the beginning of the time when companies need to think about, is Hong Kong in the long term where we want to operate?
Yep.
Is, you know, for a lot of companies, Hong Kong is their base of operations for Asia. That's where their headquarters or, you know, regional headquarters is. It's where a lot of American expats, for example, base themselves. Same for the Commonwealth countries. Hong Kong, of course, being part of the United Kingdom for so long. But a lot of these companies, many of these companies are starting to consider, is Hong Kong the place we want to be 20 years from now, if we're going to see more movement towards Hong Kong looking more like the rest of China? Do we stay there or do we decamp to another westernized country that plays by a Western rule set here? And for a lot of countries, that's Singapore, where, again, we have a former British, mostly British base of operations that's an independent city, country, city state. Now and operates in that way and typically follows Western norms, leaving out the caning and things like that that goes on. But this isn't a today thing. But as you pointed out, if you haven't already looked at your BC plans, now is really the last chance you're going to get to take a solid look at this. And it's also, I think, the beginning of the time in which you need to evaluate: is Hong Kong where you want to be in the long term, or is there another location that is going to be better suited for you 5, 7, 10 years down the road?
Yeah, we don't get a cut from Singapore for saying it. You know, I think all preference would be to be able to have those kind of bases of kind of or entry points into Asia, both through Hong Kong, through Singapore, through other locations, kind of in that region, but. The viability of Hong Kong right now going forward, as of now, if the current trajectory stays in place.
The long-term thought process, where does it take us?
You have to really look at that.
And back in, when was the handover, in 1997?
Yes.
Right? I was 23 in 1997, and I remember watching this, and I had no clue what this would mean, you know, in the long term. But here we are, almost 22 years past the handover, or close to. I think that it's the end of the year, is the anniversary, and you're starting to see those first big steps towards significant change there. So definitely one that you need to keep an eye on, and our recommendations are to look at your BC planning and start to think long-term, is this where you want to be?
Evac plans as well, travel itineraries.
To get out of there quickly.
Just kind of taking a holistic look and assuming that, hey, this gets shut down, this goes martial law, this goes in a direction where we're kind of isolated. What is it that you're going to need to do in order to keep your people safe, continue your operations, things like that? So holistic look right now is, as you mentioned, kind of your last opportunity while it's still relatively, there's some stability left. Now is the time.
Our last story for this episode is from the New York Times, but the release is really the FBI releasing the 2018 Uniform Crime Report, or UCR, which was released yesterday, Monday, September 30th. And the big headline here is that violent crime in the United States, including homicides, declined in 2018 for the second straight year, according to FBI data that was released on Monday. Overall, the nation's crime rate dropped by 6.5%, which was led by a 6.9% decline in the property crime rate. That's 16 years in a row in which property crime dropped. The homicide rate dropped by 6%, primarily driven by significant declines in homicides in both Baltimore and Chicago. On the other side of the equation, rape, sexual assault, as the FBI calls it, and aggravated sexual assault, climbed in 2018.
Now, they're suggesting they're wondering if that's a little bit as a result of the Me Too movement, where there's been greater reporting, greater documentation of those crimes. Excuse me. That's a part of the reason that kicks in. There's also been a lot of work around that particular crime type in terms of the crime reports over the last 10 to 15 years. Kind of better documentation of that, because it's a little bit inconsistent in terms of how states and counties report those in. So I think there's been an improvement on kind of defining and accounting for those as well.
The New York Times says that the number of rapes reported in 2018 increased by 2.7%, and it was the only category of violent crime that rose last year, according to the Uniform Crime Report. Criminologists said that it was not clear whether more sexual assaults were occurring or whether more people were reporting assaults amid the Me Too movement. The FBI also complicates the results because they revised the way they classified rape to include both males as victims and expanding the definition of rape to include types of attacks that were not previously counted. By the way, those guidelines were changed in 2013. And since those guidelines have changed, rape has the number of reported rapes to law enforcement has grown more than 18%. We should point out the Uniform Crime Report, although this is usually the crime stats that folks use, It only includes crimes that have been reported to law enforcement.
Correct.
There's another survey that's conducted by the Department of Justice called the National Crime Victimization Survey, which is also done every year. And that is a sampling of individuals to determine if they have been victims of crime and then reports that data. Those numbers are always higher because some folks are victims of crime and they never report it to law enforcement. But you can look at the increases between the two and draw some correlation. So for companies, some ways that you can use this data, it can be a key source of objective data that you can use in policy discussions. You can use it as a source of data to assess your security posture and actions that you may want to take or not take. And we consider this one of the key annual reports to read and understand for the security profession, particularly looking at actions around your major site locations, cities, states, et cetera, counties.
Yeah, it's a good reference document, kind of a good, I would say, source of truth, because to your point, it's only reported and it's only those cities and counties and kind of law enforcement entities that report in. Not all do or do in the same way, but it really is a good bellwether, especially as you're looking kind of across the nation. If you operate in different cities and different locations, kind of understanding what the trends are there to make sure that your postures, depending on your industry, are appropriate to kind of what's happening in those areas and where you should add resources or potentially subtract. Now, of course, this data is from 2018, so it's almost a year old, which is always the case, because they take a lot of time to scrub through it. But it definitely, in terms of the trends and things that they see, you can take a look at those and use those as you're planning out your security posture.
And I always like to see this data. I mean, I'm a data guy by nature. I like to have things proven to me using data. But I think one of the things that this always helps me with as a security professional is, although I think the world is more uncertain and more risky today than it has ever been in my lifetime, and it never, to me, the world never really gets safer. I do think that most people in the United States in particular think that there's this enormous amount of violent crime and homicide. And in fact, we're at a near 50-year low of violent crime and homicide rate in this country. And down by more than half from the 1990s when I was coming out of high school on my own into college.
Yep.
So I like to see the data. But most folks are totally shocked by that when they see a graph of this and how far it's dropped. And particularly when we look at news coming out of Baltimore and Chicago and Washington, D.C., which I will note that D.C. is way up, 2018 into 2019.
D.C. and Philadelphia. I think were the two high risers.
Washington, D.C. was up 36% for homicide rates, and Philadelphia was up 10%. And I should point out here that the important data, because we're looking at crime data, although they do report whole numbers, the important data is the crime rates, because you need to control crime. You need to control crime data by population. A rise in population doesn't necessarily mean an increase in crime.
Well, and I think to your point, I think it's an important point to kind of reiterate that you made in terms of it's a good reality check what we're seeing, how we're feeling, how we're perceiving things, to be able to go back and just kind of gut check ourselves against some of the data to go, okay, let's put this in the appropriate context, to focus in on the areas that we are seeing increases in, but also understanding kind of in totality what's going on, to make sure that we're not making big assumptions. We're able to explain away decisions in terms of security strategy or other kind of operational decisions to leadership, who may see who may read this in the paper going, what are you talking about? Crime's down. Why are we investing in that? Well, here's why, and understand that this is the context. So yes, you are correct. It's down nationwide. However, in Washington, D.C.,
it's up.
It's up, and we need to account for that, and we're seeing this impact here.
And we're experiencing this locally right now. Here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis has had an increase in violent crime, particularly homicide involving firearms this year. But St. Paul is on the other side of the Mississippi River here, is having a huge spike.
Yep.
They've got some gang conflict that's driving the bulk of this, and it's just not been a good summer for the city of St. Paul in this area. But this kind of data helps us kind of see that in context and put it in reality over time. And there was a spike in 16, 17, and 18. We saw some uptick in violent crime, and now we're seeing it come back down.
Yeah, I think it was 2015, 2016. So there was definitely a spike. And so that's part of it, too, is to understand that we'll go through these ebbs and flows of kind of a lot of increase and then some decrease to kind of figure out where we're at, you know, in the norm. So, you know, although it's a 6% decrease, it's obviously an improvement, but compared, you know, it's still dropping those increases mm-hmm. from 2015, 2016, potentially. So it's all good context. It's good information. It's kind of vetted. Like I said, they take months and months to scrub this and organize it and make sure that, you know, they feel confident with the data that they mm-hmm. have, before kind of releasing it and making it official, because a lot of law enforcement and other agencies use this to, you know, account for budgetary things and their strategies as well. So they want to make sure it's accurate. Mm-hmm.
You can find we'll put a link to the FBI data in the show notes, but you can also find it and other contexts at FBI.gov. They've got some cool reporting tools. Mm-hmm. You can use the slice and dice and extract this data the way that you want. That's it for this edition of the Managing Uncertainty podcast. We'll be back with a new episode next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe through your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BrightPath.com.